Honourable members, Deputy Minister and Acting Director General, we're going to head for questions now, but let me just outline quickly. You know, the powers invested by me, you know, one thing about it that we had, we've got a Deputy Minister who was also chairperson of a portfolio committee at one stage. So with the powers invested in me, we're going to proceed the following way, Deputy Minister. The members is going to ask questions, and we will take some responses from the department, but not all, because we are more focused on our way forward. Because it is done. What's been done has been done. There's 169,000 bag of cement for 1 rand and that you've put in here, wasteful and fruitful expenditure. It's gone, it's done. So our aim is that, and the members have agreed with me, is that we look at moving forward so that next year when you come, we don't have this again, but better. Because you must remember one thing. If you are doing bad, it's got a reflection, not just on you. It's got a snowball effect. So we want to avert that. We don't want to look as, because we've got our oversight and we can then go into the media and we can go and do this and say that the department is bad and all that. But I'm one person that believes I like the problem but also give the resolution to the problem. It's not enough in our power to resolve the problem, but we can put our heads together to try and resolve the problem. As I've always said, I'm always saying this, if you try and fail in your trying, you will understand. But if you don't try and come with cut and paste, you won't understand that. That is one part that we won't understand. So on the 17th, DG, we will then get the responses, proper responses, but also on the way forward. And what will the action plan be of the department in how we are not going back in the regression mode, CFO, but look at the way forward. So with that, also the members have agreed that we closed at half past one, those that want to have lunch, have lunch. Those that want to fly back to their legal loved ones, you can feel free to do that as such. And that we then reconvene on the 17th of October so that we can then have discussions with each other and look each other in the eye and say, fine, this is how we're going to move forward. This is, member, this is what we are doing. Your question has now been answered. This is our answer, but also This is what we're going to do in future, not to be in a state where we are now. So the members have been in agreement, Deputy Minister and DG, from your side.
Very happy.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, is there anyone in disagreement? Talk to me now, because I've got powers. Talk to me now. No one. Honourable members, over to you. Honourable Sitoli, Frick, and Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. And I must greet the Deputy Minister and thank him for his commitment to this department. But Chairperson, when I was perusing this report, it reminded me that there was a turnaround strategy, 7 years turnaround strategy from the department. One of the turnaround strategy was the stabilization of leadership. But today, it shows that we are going back. We have an acting DG. The PMTE have got no head. It now resurface the issue of incarcerate. I have a concern about the CEO because when we were with him last year, he said he's going to put his head on the block, that this year the department is going to have the unqualified audit without any emphasis. But the same emphasis that was shown by all secondaries are the same. There's no changes. It shows that somehow, somewhere, there's some cut and paste in this report. Chairperson, I'm worried because we hope that after the work that was done by the DG and Honorable the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the officials which were capable to help the department. Now they were no more. Not because they're dead. I'm worried, Chairperson, because if you don't have the stabilization in the department, how are they going to implement the 7 years strategy? Because that stabilization was one part of that general strategy. And Chairperson, when we were doing oversight in Western Cape, there was some challenge on Small Harbour about the budget. What is the plan for the government to help those small harbors? Because there was some crisis in that in our oversight. And I want to find out, Chairperson, about the inner city regeneration, because there is nothing that has been said from this report about the inner city regeneration. Have they closed that one? Have they finished it? What happened? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of the about the disclaimer of IDT. Because IDT is the baby, the entity of the department. They get a disclaimer. They are losing client. What is the department doing to help them? I think Chairperson will talk a lot on the 17th because now it's just putting questions, answers without. We are not going to have some sufficient questions today. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Story, Honourable C.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I want to start off with the adverse opinion. And I know the CFO apologized and gave reasons for it. But I'm not so sure, and I don't believe that they were comprehensive reasons, enough reasons, sorry for the word. Because if I look at the audit report, first of all, again, similar to yesterday, where the entity got an disclaimer, they said we're nearly there. And now again, this entity gets an adverse opinion. That's bad. I mean, an adverse opinion means that financial figures were misstated, they were misrepresented, and or inaccurate. Now, there's a number of reasons for that, Honourable Chairperson. It can either be error or fraud. Okay. Now, the explanation given is assuming that, or implying rather, sorry, implying that it was error. Now, we would like to believe that is the case. But what is the ultimate effect of misstating or misrepresenting figures is that either you show a deficit or you show surplus. That's the effect. And I mean, 26 billion rand overstatement is substantial. We can understand if it's a small error, if it's a small amount, but you can't continually make mistakes to the extent that it becomes a 26 billion rand mistake. I'm sure the Auditor General would have picked up the error if, let's believe that it's an error. And therefore the department or the entity would have been given an opportunity to correct the error, because that's what normally happens. And surely, if that was the case, then the error could have been corrected before it ended up with a disclaimer. If you look at the explanation that is given by the Auditor General, over and above the explanation that was given by the CFO, is that the entity incorrectly utilized source data. That's fine. It's one of those things. It can happen. You might not be competent enough in that. We can understand that. That we can accept. But when it goes further to say that the entity also incorrectly recognized expenditure as additions to property, plant, equipment. Now, that's fundamental errors. I mean, really. That is inexcusable. Additions, there's a total difference between capitalization and an operational expense. Furthermore, the useful lives utilized in calculating depreciation were not reflective of the actual condition of assets being depreciated. Now, again, we've seen major cases where, for example, your Enron experience, and just recently we've seen a KPMG where they conducted an audit but still did not detect certain errors that could have been detected. And here we have a situation where whoever was responsible for reproducing or producing accurate financial information did not do that, because I wonder if those assets even existed. Well, sorry, the CFO did say they said they existed and the rights and obligations criteria was met. But the accuracy or the inaccuracy of those assets as a result of, again, a fundamental generally recognized accounting principle of depreciation and useful life. I mean, that was not applied. So it's serious. And I'm hoping to believe that there is an improvement. But the question is, maybe my question, Honourable Chairperson, is how did you get to a situation where all these errors resulted in an overstatement of 26 billion rands worth of assets? That's the question. Is how do you get to that? Somebody must be held accountable. It's major. You can make small mistakes, but when you make a 26 billion rand mistake, it becomes a serious issue. So I just would like to just indicate or illustrate my concern with regards to that. Then further issues that I would like to comment on is the and in no particular order, but the overdraft of 1.9 billion. And again, the explanation that was given was that the reason for the overdraft was because Treasury didn't give us enough money. So now you don't get enough money, so you go and use money that you don't have. Ultimately, when is that overdraft going to be serviced? Because an overdraft comes with interest as well. It's not just I think the figure is about similar to the rest, 700 and something thousand, a million, I beg your pardon. So that's another issue, Honourable Chairperson. My colleague who has left raised the issue about CMAX prison, which is 6 years overdue, and 151 million over budget. The Van Rensdorp Correctional Service also 7 years overdue, 91 million in budget. The minister indicated that you have possible reasons, could be that you've got one project manager on 20 projects. Now, why do we have that situation? Why do you, first of all, give a project manager 20 projects? Don't we have enough project managers in the country to manage the projects? So how do you end up with a situation where you have, you know, I cannot accept that you say that you can expect delays. Well, if you have that attitude, then you are going to have, ultimately, you're going to have delays. It's the same way of investing money, and you say, well, you can expect a loss. Then why invest money? I mean, rather keep the money, well, previously in the government bonds, but why do that? Why do something where there is a risk that you are not going to meet your targets? So rather upfront, do the thing properly. The expenditure, okay, fine. The you've done well. You've spent 90, I think it's 98%. But that's not the concern, Honourable Chairperson. The concern here is that you've now underspent. You've underspent by 109 million, which was indicated. Now, when you underspend, it means that certain targets have not been met, and that is the concern. Is that the moment you underspend, you underspend. I know you've indicated, Sipho, that the issue is going to be rectified, and then that's why we are here, as the Honourable Chairperson said. But it's just issues we need to highlight is exactly what's going to happen on the 17th. It's okay, fine. We have a situation here where we have not met our service delivery targets, and how are we going to rectify that? There's an issue that is also concerning with regards to the asset register, and we know that there's about 27,000 land parcels and about 90,000 properties. We were told yesterday by the Auditor General's office that they are, that the system being used in 2017 is Excel. Now, first of all, that is problematic. Secondly, the reason why it's more problematic is that apparently there has been a system that the department has purchased but has not are not using currently. So the question asked yesterday, and the DDG said that the answer will be given today, was that what is the cost of that system, that package, whatever has been used, and when can we expect that to be implemented? If you'll allow me, Honourable Chair, I just want to refer to this document again on page 106. It deals with a number of issues, also probably related to the fact that we are still using Excel. Now, see, there's expenditure here for computer software and expenditure on computers. And in one instance, it is, let me get there if you'll allow me, Honourable Chairperson, 106, I said. No, sorry, that's not the one. Let me talk about the computer package. So we have a situation where they say that the delays are due to contractors not performing. So again, we're using Excel. We have spent large amounts of money, I'm sure, on a computer package. But when we do spend that money, we are spending it with contractors who are not up to standard. The one on page 106 that I want to refer to is we have a table there, 413 and 414. They give us, you see there's a number of staff that have left the department, and we see that there are big numbers, resignation, 208, expiry of contract, 514, and then retirement, 100. Now, those are big numbers. The total, all in all, is 864. But it says here reasons why staff left the department, and we say resignation. Now, again, why is somebody resigning? We would think that the government is the employer of choice, should be. But now we have staff that are resigning, and these staff that leave at the end of the contract, are they no longer required in the department? In other words, does that service that they were performing become redundant, or who replaces them, or how are they replaced? I want to move on to, just to make sure that I'm speaking about the right. Okay, well, it's on page 164. We don't have to refer to it, but that's the issue about the computer services and the monies that we've spent on computer services. But we still use in Excel, but we talk about other computer services. So there's large amounts of money being spent on computer services and software upgrades, but not too much has been shown within the department. I'm nearly done, Honourable Chairperson. I think I've got two more issues. On page 267, we don't have to go this way. It's again about the issue about computer software. So the issue I'm wanting to make is that the point is that we're spending large amounts of money, it's on page 164 and 267 as well, on computer software, but we're still using Excel. That's all I have today, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you said earlier on that we've got a bunch of new people here, so we mustn't spend too much time focusing, but I think that I certainly don't need to school you in the fact that the sins of the father will be visited on the son. But on a serious note, I think that a rearview mirror is important. It's imperative to good driving, and I think we need to look back and reflect. Now, again, no answers needed today, but some points that I want to specifically drive home. We spoke about clean audit and let's first of all acknowledge the unqualified audit. It's a sound achievement, so well done on that. But there's still some distance before a clean audit. Clean audit, one of the key components of a clean audit is achieving a high percentage of your predetermined objectives. What we have here, similar to yesterday and the issues that were raised yesterday, we've spent 98% of the budget and we've only achieved 57% of the targets. So I told the story yesterday about my mother giving me a hiding because I went to the shop with money for a loaf of bread. I came back with half a loaf because I'd spent the rest on chips. Okay, so I got a good clock and I deserved it. The same applies here. We are spending public money. We are stating that with that public money we're going to achieve certain things and we're not achieving those things. Someone must be held to account for that. So achieving only 57% of your targets is not great. This is something that needs serious, serious attention, and that's going to stop you from your clean audit going forward until such time as you actually start delivering on your mandates. Now, place that 57% in context with the popular perception that is held both by the user departments and the broader public. And the public perception is that Public Works is not fulfilling their mandate. So therefore, spending 98% of our allocated budget and only achieving 57% of targets, it's not irregular, it's not fruitless and wasteful, but it's actually abusing the public purse. My challenge to the Minister, and I'm sorry that he's left, is that he needs to do a lot more managing by walking about, speaking to people in the end user department, pitching up at his local police station, the local hospital, and talking to the local station commissioner, commander these days, sorry, station commanders and CEOs of the hospitals, and hearing what are the issues with public works, because they will tell him, especially if he goes with a pair of sunglasses and a big hat on. But they will tell him, and he will get the sense that public works department is not well thought of by the broader community, by the user departments, and by the people that we are supposed to service. And I think a lot of the issue is that people are going through the motions, and this is what we've experienced in the last 3 days. People are going through the motions of doing their jobs. You know, I've got a job description, I'm going through the motion of doing it, but not really understanding their role in terms of the bigger picture and the fact that we are here to actually deliver service to people. And the minister had a go at me the other day and said that I didn't understand that these policy priorities that he presented were policy and had nothing to do with implementation and actual operations. And I disagree with that. Fundamentally, these policy priorities that have been put here are so broad and so theoretical that they've stopped us from actually implementing and doing those operational things that we need to be doing as a department, or that Public Works needs to be doing as a department. So if your policy is not addressing your operations, you're actually not empowering your teams to get out there and do their jobs. The policy, you can actually draw a line through all five of these items and just right there go back to basics. Now, my honourable colleague mentioned the fact that we've got a turnaround strategy. And the turnaround strategy, quite correctly, said that step one was stabilising the department. And we've heard over the last few days, we're well on track with our turnaround strategy, but we're not, because we've got acting, and the new appointment, newly appointed this, and there's no stability. And I think in order, the deputy minister, I think, is the most stable employee of the department. That's not mentally stable. But I think that stability within this department is imperative, and to have a plan and charge with that plan and go for it. This is where we're talking about a radical change, because the slow turnaround is not achieving the outcomes that are needed. In the face of rapid population growth, massive urbanization, and a burgeoning working class, there's so much pressure being put on government facilities throughout. All of our user departments, all of their facilities are under massive pressure. And a radical policy change is needed. We need to step back and relook exactly what Public Works is doing. And it was so clear in the last couple of days with the trading entities and the various people that came and presented to us. Everyone's in a bit of a state of flux and are either currently reworking their business models and their delivery models and their visions, or they've just completed the process. I think Public Works as a whole needs to take a strong step back and take a good look at what is our core mandate, what is supposed to be being done, and refocus our priorities tremendously. So the fact is, I've written out, focus on your knitting. Just keep to the basics. There are obviously transformation imperatives that must be taken into account, but ultimately the best way we can transform South African society is to make sure that the people that need the services that government provides are able to get those services. And having walked into Home Affairs in my hometown recently, having been on oversight to the Eastern Cape recently, I can tell you now, people are not looking forward to walking into government facilities. They prefer to stay away. Just a couple of comments that I picked up from the presentation and the audit report as well. I think that there was considerable talk about risk management, and the fact that there's a risk management process in place. I think that a copy of the risk register would be most useful to our committee, so that we can effectively see where the risks lie going forward. So if I can request that a copy of that risk register be submitted to us. And I think that we certainly, we've identified a number of substantial risks post the department, and maybe we can give some input on that once we've had a look at that list as well. I wanted to comment as well on the overdraft facility. The rolling of unauthorized expenditure and under-recoveries through an overdraft facility is unsustainable. An overdraft facility is short-term debt supposed to bridge your debtors, and not your entire debtors book, a portion of your debtors book. If you're going to be rolling unauthorized expenditure through the overdraft facility, you're on the hiding to nothing. If you are under-recovering, and the reason for that under-recovery, according to the Auditor General's report, is that our systems are not in place. So if you don't submit an invoice, you're not going to get a payment. I think as well that there was a comment about departments that are slow to pay us. And there must be an agreement in place. If we're undertaking the work, there must be an agreement in place. Then they must pay it. If they're not paying, they are incurring, or they're helping us to incur financing costs through overdraft facility. Honourable Fig mentioned the interest factor. But that's not the only cost that comes with financing. So those should certainly be passed on to the user departments. If they're not paying on time, they must fork out. I think one of the big issues with the risk management as well that I wanted to highlight is the fact that there are so many legal cases pending. There was a, what did we call it yesterday? It was IDT, who was sitting with their legal issues, where they've actually established a legal team to deal with all of the cases that are being brought against them by various people for non-payment, being brought against them for non-delivery, etc. And that is a massive, massive risk. If we're not paying our contractors, once again, that is further, it's actually harming us, undoing any good that we're doing in terms of empowering the local population and looking to economic transformation. If we're not paying our contractors, we as government are not paying the guys that are doing the work for us. How much harm are we doing to people? We had a situation yesterday where workers are not being paid. Now, I don't believe in this case it was the result of Public Works not making the payment, but I do know that there are cases where non-payment by the department has resulted in workers not being paid and people going hungry. That is not economic transformation. Yes, the PMTE not using their accounting system that they procured and sitting with 92,000 plus assets listed on an Excel spreadsheet. It's diabolical. It beggars belief. The fact that you're using an Excel spreadsheet to manage something like that is scary. All you need is one person that doesn't have a thorough knowledge of Excel to hit the sort button and not highlight all the columns, and you are back to scratch. So I think that's something that was the item that needed to be hauled out and taken note of. I wanted to point out as well the IDT, the disclaimer on the audit, total absence of controls according to the audit report, and a CFO who does not grasp the seriousness of the shortcomings. The CFO was telling us how she nearly got a clean audit. A disclaimer is not a light thing. I think we've got the same situation today where, you know, we nearly got clean. No, but we didn't. We're a long way off clean. Ladies and gentlemen, the Auditor General doesn't give these things lightly. Between the IDT and the PMTE, I think these are the two areas that need the most serious focus in terms of accounting practices and systems that need to be put in place. I also got a note here about PMTE's overdraft. I think that if there is, in fact, a problem in recovering monies due from other departments, I think certainly Treasury needs to assist. You know, we tend to be far too generous as government departments to each other and say, you know, terms of Chapter 3 of the Constitution, we don't take each other to court and we don't start legal proceedings against each other. But in terms of Chapter 3 of the Constitution, we should also be paying each other on time and not forcing other departments to take you to court. So I think that we need to also speak to Treasury a little bit more and ask them to intervene where departments are not keeping to their commitments. And then the last one I wanted to point on, and I'm not going to hammer on it because it's been mentioned already, and the comment was, we know where the problems are. And that comment has come through strongly in the last couple of days. I think we've had it from CBE, we've had it from Agrimont South Africa, we've had it from CIDB, and we had it from IDT. We know where the problems are and we're going to fix them. Great. Is there consequence management? My unfair question the other day was, is the person now working at McDonald's? Okay. Is there consequence management? And the reality is that we need to see that coming through. The public needs to see that. Ubuntu only goes so far, and then someone needs to take account. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Honourable Ida. Honourable members, Deputy Minister, Director General, I think let's deal with the critical issues that you can answer now. Before I give over to the Deputy Minister to do some concluding remarks, what time will you be leaving, Deputy Minister?
I can tell until the 1:30.
Okay. But even if you close before 1:30, it's not fair. I see you are happy where, say, we close before 1:30. And I see your DDG, Matuta, smiling at me because you are still long in Cape Town as such. But if there's critical things, or you know what, I wonder with this, we should not leave the answering for the 14th while all members are here. I think let's do that. Leave the answering of the questions. You've noted, Mr. Mokgoro, don't book seek the 14th of October. 17th of October. Don't book sick, don't take sick leave, so that we can then have a full comprehensive answer session. And also, we're not going to deal with presentations on that day. We're going to deal with the answering of the questions and then your way forward. And how are we going to solve what is happening now? That will be our only 2 points. The remedial action, not Madam Sela's remedial action, but the remedial action and the answering. Should we do that? What about the PRRR? No, we will have to write the report. We can only write the report based on what we've got here and what we've got from the auditor. We cannot write the report on what they are going to justify as that. So we can write the report on what we've got and what we have found and what they have presented to us in that regard. Look, we're not going to sugarcoat anything. But like I said, our aim is also to assist each other in taking these things forward. Before I hand over to the Deputy Minister, acting DG, anything from your side?
Nothing, Honourable Chair. I'm thankful.
Deputy Minister?
Yes, no, thank you, Chair. I mean, first of all, let me express appreciation for the robust way in which the members, including Honourable McLaughlin, who's left, have raised the issues, and also the detailed attention that is paid to the annual report and to the report. That's appreciated. It helps our work, and we don't see it as an antagonistic relationship. It's about helping us collectively to sort matters out. And that's why I'm also very pleased with the suggestion that you've made, that we don't end up in the cycles of lamentation and justification from our side, but that we collectively focus on remedial actions. What are the lessons that we've collectively learned? Thanks also to the AGs. Criticism of us, the issues that the AG's raised, as well as the issues that you've highlighted. So let me express appreciation. If I could just touch on two issues, however, of a general nature. The one was, I thought that the Minister on the first day that I was here, that he was here, touched on, but in the absence of the Honourable Sotolia. And I just want to talk to that, because I think we need to guard against, all of us, against a narrative which is lurking around, which says that there was a reasonably good period for DPW under the Minister Mercy, with his sidekick Deputy Minister Cronin, okay, and that with challenges and so on, there was a successful turnaround process and the beginnings of stabilisation, which I think there was. And I think that, and again, we were assisted by the Portfolio Committee, in which there's also been some stability, but also not complete stability either, okay. So I think we must remain vigilant that we don't now, having successfully came out of, just radical disclaimers over many years, and having introduced a degree of stability and significant improvement, which I think the Portfolio Committee over the last several years, including the opposition parties, have acknowledged, but with correct criticisms, ongoing criticisms. So what we must make sure, all of us, on both sides of the room, make sure that we don't slip back, but we must also not get into a narrative which says that it's all now back to square one, okay? Because, I mean, the very first thing to remember is that this audit that we're looking at is an audit of the Mercy Cronin years, okay? And not of the faults need to be blamed on the fathers, and not circled on the sons, to use the metaphor that it was evoked. And to the credit of the sons, quote-unquote, they're not disowning it, just as Minister Mercy didn't disown previous ministers. And so you take on foot stewards what you inherit as a political leader. So I just wanted to guard against, a narrative that says that, okay, that there are purges and that people are disappearing and so forth and so on. There's always discomfort when a new minister or deputy minister comes in, and sometimes that discomfort might be justified, but it might also be because people are in rut and have become comfortable and need to be shaken up, and a new perspective is also to be welcomed. So I just wanted to make that point, so that we don't, and above all to make the point that the audit that we're looking at is not about the new minister, for that matter, and it's actually about the previous one. Then I just wanted to briefly touch on the point which I interacted with briefly last time that the Honourable Ryder has made, because I think he's exactly, you're right, okay, which is critically we've got to, as you said, get back to basics, focus on, stick to your knitting is the English phrase, which I'm a curious English phrase, but anyhow, which you made. And I think that part of the problem, and this is where we need, as we go forward with the Portfolio Committee, as we discuss the white paper process that we're involved in, it's all very well coming back to basics or stick to your knitting, but what are the basics? And what is our knitting as a Department of Public Works? I don't know that question has ever been properly and adequately answered. And I think some of the problems that you're picking up on when you visit a clinic or a police station or whatever relate to that issue. Okay. So so I'm glad that you're saying these things. So I think that what's happened over the last several years was finally the beginning of the implementing of a property management trading entity. I think that has been a big step forward. With this adverse opinion now, some of the challenges are inevitable in a major transitional process. Because prior to, although there had been a long-standing cabinet decision, but dating back to 2006, to set up this, it wasn't set up. And therefore, because our knitting is basically this huge property portfolio, as you correctly alluding. That's our knitting. There are other things that we do, Standard Public Works programs and other things, but our key function is to be the custodian of this huge property portfolio. But because we hadn't said that and identified that in policy, and we still don't have it effectively in legislation, we didn't know what we were doing. So the property management function was scattered in a whole lot of different branches and overlapping ways and so on. So I think that notwithstanding the adverse opinion, which partly has to do with the three-year grace, and suddenly the three-year grace period was over, and we ran into higher standards, and it's correct that we should, and obviously we failed to pay adequately to meet them and so on. I think that's fine. Okay. But now, what is our property management basic? Okay. And I think increasingly what we're realizing, and we need your assistance, particularly in the oversight process and so on, is that we're the custodian of these things, but are we the stewards? There's custodianship and then there's stewardship of a police station, of a hospital, and so on. And I think there's a lot of confusion in that space. And what we wanted to argue, and this is still work in progress, is that we must take the custodianship, and even there's muddles about custodianship, but we must be the custodian. But we shouldn't be replacing light bulbs in police stations. And when we try to, we don't do it, or there's corruption, there's all kinds of problems. There the so-called client departments need to be the stewards of the properties that they're occupying. We mustn't get into that space. They mustn't expect us to do it. They've got to then develop the capacity. But we also get client departments that want to be custodians of departments and make custodianship decisions, and they don't have the capacity to do that. And we need to build the capacity more effectively. So, I'm going on longer than I intended because everyone wants to go, including myself. But I just wanted to welcome the points that you're making. And I think that it would be very useful when you do, amongst other things, oversight visits and visit premises and things, to help us to think more clearly about what is our knitting, you know, what is our core function as DPW, and how do we professionalize that, improve it, and so on the one hand, and when a police station is dirty or not properly maintained and so on, is it our fault? Yes, probably. But should it be our fault? Clearly major maintenance, major and so on, is a custodianship role. But the day-to-day things which are often the problem, is that our proper space? We sometimes want to get into the space and so on. So I think I really like your emphasis that you're placing on policy, not in a broad general way, but what are we as a Department of Public Works? And I think we've made progress in identifying that over the last period, but I think there's still a way to go. So, Chair, you can see I'm incapable of answering detailed questions about IT and why we're still on Excel and so on. I don't know. And obviously those are the sorts of things that we need to answer when we get to things. But our role as certainly our role as the Deputy Minister is more in the policy space, and I think there's still work to be done. And it's not just about theorising, it's about linking the policy to the reality. And clearly you're right, people don't want to go into public buildings. There's a big difference between a private bank, they're making money out of us and so on, so a private bank and a public building. And there shouldn't be that vast difference. Public buildings should be decent, safe spaces for those who work there and for those members of the public who come into it. So, FDDG and the Chairperson, thanks for the opportunity to philosophize. As a father now, as the most stable member, which is not entirely true, by the way, of DPW. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And we look forward to the meeting on the 70th. And I won't get an opportunistic infection, I promise you.
No, thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable Fultani, welcome. You've come in at the tail end of the meeting. We're going to adjourn now, but I will allow you the last minute, the last point. We will reconvene on the 17th of October, but that reconvening meeting won't be them giving presentations, but them coming to answer the questions. So if you've got any questions, you can forward it to them in writing. what you've got, the acting DG will take that, but also then come back with the answers of all the questions of every member on the 17th of October, but also on how they're going to rectify the remedial actions and what are the actions that they will put in place and take going forward to remedy the situation where they are in at the moment. But Honourable Futane.
Thank you, Chair. It's a question which should be answered on the 17th. Maybe it's prudent for me to put it verbally rather than in writing, because I would like for the Honourable Deputy Minister to immediately have the team applying their minds to it, if at all. It's a valid question, valid in the sense that it has not been addressed before. Is there a clear understanding between the on the part of the departments that use your buildings about what their responsibilities as stewards? Do you have a written contract between the various departments as well as yourselves? And how regularly do you check on whether they are doing their bit to maintain the buildings? The reason I'm asking these questions, Chair, beyond the obvious, students out there, I was addressing students in a certain, university last night. That's why I was away. And they have got this cry that, and all they see is the institution failing to maintain the infrastructure. And they've got all sorts of reasons to complain, like crime being committed when the fencing is not up to scratch and so on and so on and what have you. So they direct their inquiries to the relevant institution. If it's education, it will be education. Not knowing that there is an owner, so to speak, behind the institution. Now, this is why it becomes critical for us as committee to know if actually the institution, the user institutions, have got a clear understanding as much as you do about their responsibilities and whether you actually follow up on a regular basis to make sure that they do their bit, so that ultimately you're not blamed for not making them, we're sure that the buildings are in a good state of repair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Futane. Honourable Ryder?
Okay, sorry, just for the sake of completeness and perhaps in the spirit of covering for each other, I know that the Honourable Matthijs would, had she been here, would have certainly raised the issue of the EPWP implementation. And it's something that I share with her as well, is that a concern about the way that EPWP is implemented on the ground. And I think we also, going forward, would need to have some guidance on that. The fact is that, yes, the implementation might not best appear with the department, but it's certainly it's part of the responsibility. It's the department's project, and so some responsibility for the implementation must be taken. And the fact is, I think the minister said the other day, that bottom end of things, it's not supposed to happen that councillors are in control, and it was dismissed on that basis. But I think that the fact remains is the general reality is that this is how it is being left. I know that Tshwane has earlier this week passed a bylaw which specifically details the method of implementation of the EPWP and the allocation of workers. And I think that perhaps some guidance going forward from this department through to the implementing agents further down the track would be most welcome. And I think perhaps that that is something also that we could look to getting some sort of an answer about what is envisioned for future. Will the department be giving some guidance down further down the food chain? Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Ryder. We've got that scheduled in our annual program for the 14th of November, where the EPWP sector must come and brief us. The committee on, we've got the Chief Director here, EPWP, jobs created, and all other programs related to the EPWP as such. So we've got them on the 14th of November. So you've got ample time to prepare yourself. Don't do the cut and paste jobs and all that. There's ample time to prepare yourself. Honourable members, Deputy Minister, Acting Director General, and the Public Works family, we want to thank you very much for constructive and but clear, truthful, and open frankness way that we can engage. I've been in this committee since 2014. Honourable Sotoli has been here since 1911. Since 2011. He was also commenting that the first time that such a full complement of DPW officials are here right through the process. We want to thank the Acting DG for being here for the whole 3 days. His other Director Generals, Director General, Deputy Director General Butcher, Matuta, also Acting Director Florence Rabada. She says she's very happy that we can adjourn. She said that she can go and coach the other Rabada further how to bowl buses. And then all other staff, the CFO, who normally just comes and do a hit and run in and out, but he has been here for the past 2 days. Thank you very much, Mr. Mukoro, and but also the staff of the Office of the Director General that's been here, that has been here, also the staff of the Deputy Minister. The Chief of Staff has been here since Tuesday. I call him the Chief of the Army, and the Office of the Minister that has been here, the PLO, and everyone. It is really... Oh, the age is not the age. Huh? Oh, she left. Huh? Oh, okay. Hey, I don't like to thank people in the absence. But the AG... But what it really shows to me, members, is that there is a concerted effort from the Department of Public Works. They realize that they've messed up. But the good thing about it is that with the realization of messing up, that they want to correct things. And I think we should allow them that space to correct things, but it also allows them the fact that we will walk with them the road and keep them on their toes. And that's why I've suggested that we will have this quarterly engagement with the department. But also not just with the department, but with the entity. And one thing that has stand out, Director General and Deputy Minister, on our oversights, there is a lack of coordination between head office and regional offices. That is what we have picked up, is that the regional officers guys think that they are the head of us. And on the other hand, they complain to say, but hey, head of us does not give us any support, or head of us does not do this, or head of us does not do that. So much so that the client departments, on the other hand, expect. You know, we went to a prison in East London. And rightly, I have to say, the client department expected public works to change the light bulb. Now, I was saying to them, but hey, guys, you've got manpower here. You've got experienced people also here. So you want people from public works or to appoint a contractor to put the light bulb where you've got your client here in orange uniform to change these light bulbs. They can do that.
So also the correlation and the working relationship between these departments, because I think some of the departments have really been spoiled to the effect that they want public works even to feed them with a teaspoon. So that also needs to, we need to look at that type of element as well. Because it's quite easy. When you don't implement and you don't do things, it's easy to blame the other one. Like Adam was saying in the Bible, he was saying to Jesus, no, that wife you gave me, that woman, she made me eat the apple. Very easy to do that. Yeah? Is it true? He's reading the Bible. No. He's reading the Bible. So it's easy then for them then to blame public works. Now I would have really loved to say this in front of the Auditor General, but you must remember one thing. And that's why I would love that engagement with the Auditor General also present. Because they are only also human. There could be one or two mistakes that they have made that they've just slipped in. I hope that the AG's office are not using KPMG or those types of people. But we need to have that frank engagement. But also we can't have an audit report 10 days before it must be presented to a portfolio committee. That is not acceptable. That is not, and I'm not covering up for you, Mr. Mohoro. But the Auditor General must also realize that as much as they want to see efficient delivery, they should also be efficient enough to engage with the department, but also to give that report over to the department timeously, not 10 days. Then you don't have even time to look at and engage with them on certain of the findings that they were doing. So that is part of things that we need to take care of and need to look at so that we can really collect, pull everything in, you know, I nearly said there's only two members of the ruling party here, my deputy minister and myself, and I nearly wanted to say comrades to the members on my left there. But that we really need to make this work so that members by 2019, there should be a good legacy report that we as members leave behind, and that we can say, hi, we have helped and assist to make this a world standard and a class department. So that you, on that side, right hand side, wherever you want to go, maybe the butcher has got ambitions to be the director general in the presidency, can take that legacy report and say, hey, see what I've done. Fultan has given me the green light. So President, whoever it is, appoint me as your Director General. So with that words, I want to thank you very much. The members, Deputy Minister, the Chief, the DG, and all Deputy Director Generals, Chief Directors, Directors, Deputy Directors, Assistant Directors, we know that come this time, you're running a lot. And all that. I've never spoken to MTS Faisal, but the past week he's called me about how many times. That's the pressure. Now we don't want to put you under that amount of pressure, because once you work under pressure, mistakes creep in. So we want to work properly, nicely. As someone was saying to me yesterday, one of the entity's chairpersons was saying to me yesterday, a relationship under pressure, Baba Fultani, will never bear children. So I don't know what does it mean. What does he mean by that? So we want to reap the fruits and the benefits and see the results that the Department of Public Works have done and are busy doing. So we want to put you on the way and say God bless you. Enjoy your weekend, and we hope for a Springboks win. Those that All Blacks, please come on the 17th and declare your interest why you are this loyal to the country in supporting the All Blacks rugby team this weekend. Honourable Fotani will deal with you in that regard. But Deputy Minister and the team, DG and the team, all the best. God bless you with your future endeavours, and we see each other on the 17th of October. Thank you. This meeting stands adjourned. Sorry, folks. I want to thank the staff of Parliament, all the staff of Parliament for the assistance, Ms. Osman, Ms. Jobadwana, Ms. Stephanie, and Mr. Denison. All of them, thank you very much, guys, for the wonderful work that you have done in getting us a nice venue and a nice place, nice food and everything, and also giving a good report. Thank you very much. God bless you also.
Thank you, sir.
Now, what time is your flight tonight?